You look great.
Thanks. So do you. I'm sorry things got so screwed up.
I'm sorry too.
I just want you to know that when we were together, I was really happy. She's living
inside my heart now. God, I love Demi Moore in that movie.
I have the chills.
I love it.
Thinking about the scene.
I got sucked into YouTube yesterday just watching it. This Tuesday night at the Museum of Broadcast Communications at Kinzie and State, I am hosting a special screening of About Last Night at 7 o'clock with a Q&A afterward with producers and the man that wrote the script, and he joins us today. It is Tim Kazurinski. It's good to see you.
Good morning,
thanks for coming
Pete.
In.
How you doing?
Can you guys just hold me during this Bob Seger song?
This is what happens when you watch the movie every time.
Uh-huh. I love you, but I love this movie. I forgot how much I loved it.
Yeah, I saw it again recently. It holds up. It's pretty great. Yeah, pretty.
How did you write this movie?
It actually wrote it 13 full drafts of this thing, and over the course of 7 years before it finally got made. So it was, my writing partner at the time, Denise DeClue, her kid, thought that's what his mother did for a living was rewrite. It was actually called Sexual Perversity in Chicago.
Right.
It was a David Mamet one-act play. Yeah. And for 7 years it was Sexual Perversity in Chicago. Then when it was finished, the networks would not run advertising for a film with such a salacious title.
Oh, yeah.
So we had to change it to About Last Night, and I had so much hard a time remembering that title because it was kind of amorphous. I mean, I had to write it down on a piece of paper and go, what's the new title of your movie? I'm like, can't remember.
And now it's a timeless movie. But what you're saying is it took 7 years for it to actually happen.
7 years,
so people who are wanting to write and they wanting something to break, you just don't give up.
Yeah, that's it. Never give up. Never give up. It's like Winston Churchill said, never give up. Mm-hmm. And you hang in there. Well, much of this is thanks to the producers, Stuart Oaken and Jason Brett, who, getting it made, that's the huge thing.
Sure.
Because, we just handled the funny and the words.
Yeah.
They got to sell it and get it made and, get the money and get the studios to make it. And they hung in there and they're going to be there tomorrow night, too. It's exciting.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to do a little
Q&A. I'm your host,
after.
Buddy. You're looking at
it. I know. Pete is hosting the gig tomorrow night. It's a fundraiser for the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
And what a great place to have this event, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And tickets are only $15. You can get them online at, what is it, museum.tv.
But are seats still available?
Seats, it's general admission. You can go to my Facebook page. All the info is right on the front page.
Will there be popcorn?
Yes, maybe.
I am not on Facebook. I am.
What do you mean you're not on Facebook?
The last American. I am not. I have not spent a minute of my life.
What, 4 or 5 billion people on the planet and 2.5 are on Facebook? How come you're not on Facebook?
I'm not.
We'll sign you up. It takes 22
seconds. I'm old. Yeah.
I admire the people not on Facebook. Because then they're not spending their time getting sucked into it. Like, you're the second person in 2 days that told me they're not on Facebook.
You know what? It's not a political thing. My daughter, Zoe, said to me, Dad, if you go on Facebook, you would never get another minute's work done in your life. You know so many people.
Yeah.
She said it with such clarity. I went, oh, yeah.
You're right.
I would. So I have not 1 minute on the face place.
So you said it took you 7 years to write About Last Night.
Oh, so to rewrite it.
To rewrite it.
Rewrite it.
Okay. Yeah. So were you writing? Did you start writing this when you were on SNL? You were on what, 81 to 84?
Before that. You're I started kidding. Writing in 1979, and it was released in 86. It took 7 years. And I think my being on SNL helped get that thing made.
Right. So you were at Second City back in the late 70s. Who was in your class at Second City?
I was on stage at Second City. At that time was Mary Gross.
Okay.
George Wendt had already just left. He was off. He hadn't gotten Cheers yet, but he was out in L.A. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Belushi.
Yep.
Audrey Neenan had left. It was Bruce Kelly, Bruce Jarko, Nancy Kelly, and Rob Reilly.
Okay.
And the lovely Mary Gross.
You spent 4 years on SNL?
I spent three and a half seasons on SNL, three years at Second City. That was the most fun.
What a great experience.
Second City was more fun than SNL.
Really? Well, SNL, everybody.
The pressure is
Did they just pluck you out of Second City? Is that how that was working back then?
Exactly. And I didn't weirdly, because I was an ad man with Leo Burnett at the time, and Second City hired me out of the workshops, and I did an audition there, and weirdly, I didn't know, but John Belushi had recommended me for the show, and they came and saw me. I never auditioned. I was not aware they were in the house, which is great, because I would have just been
right,
an idiot.
Right.
Yeah. I don't audition well, so they slipped into town, took a look, and hired me unbeknownst.
Now, I read that when you were on SNL, you wanted to quit.
And yeah.
John talked you out of it. Is that true?
John and Judy, literally, I quit because it was like crazy that first season.
Well, Michael, it's cutthroat, right?
Yeah. Michael O'Donoghue was running the show, and at one, he told.
Oh, this is the show. I forgot. Lauren left the show for
Lauren
a time.
Lauren left, yeah. Dick Ebersole produced it for 5 years.
Yeah. That was
which
the whole
nobody
time
remembers,
you, were there.
You know, you had Eddie Murphy, Joe Piscopo.
Well, people remember
Julie
your
Dreyfus.
Cast. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great cast. But Lauren never reran those shows. Because you get no money, so he does. Why does he want to run Dick Ebersole shows and reruns?
Shoot! So you're not making any scratch on cable right now.
No, I thought I'd put the kids through college on the residuals, and they never reran them.
Tim Kazurinsky, some of the characters that you played on SNL: Billie Jean King.
Yep.
You know, now that I see you, there is a resemblance.
I was just going to say that. I thought, well, I can't say that out loud.
I did play Judy Garland once.
You played Hitler?
I played Hitler.
Okay. Ozzy Osbourne?
Ozzy.
Gary Hart?
Yeah.
Mo Howard?
Mo, yeah.
Okay, I can see one of the Three Stooges. You played Gandhi in a bit called Gandhi and the Bandit.
Yes. Yeah, but I also used to do a Gandhi sort of character as the these great unanswered questions of the universe. This had a guru named Having a Good Time Vishnu over here, and he would answer these great unanswered questions of the universe. But it was also done in an Indian accent, and I never got hammered like Apu did.
Right. I mean, could you get away with that today? SNL, maybe.
On SNL only.
Yeah. I also played a Puerto Rican character on there, which would not happen anymore. I was a Wayne Huevos, which means...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you for the hand gesture.
Pantomiming.
Right. The universal gesture for Huevos.
But I was never... I wasn't a mean Indian guy. I was...
You were a happy...
I was
Indian
a happy,
guy.
Kind of charming, sweet.
Did you create those characters from Second City and take them with you, or did they kind of evolve as you were in New York?
The couple I brought over from Second City, one was the Dr. Jack Badovsky, the guy who had the diseases on the flip cards, which is had all the phobias and amputations, and I would have a list of like 35, 40 ridiculous diseases that, of course, the most popular one was the orgasms one that was played in bars around America for 20 years.
Of course.
But no, it was... It was fun. In retrospect, it was fun. When you're in there, it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah. You also played Henry Thomas, Elliot from E.T., which is, you look like him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually spent that week babysitting Drew Barrymore.
And, what?
Yeah, she kind of took a shine to me and her mother, Ildiko Jade, and she was 8. And she's the cutest thing. And
I forgot about that.
Yeah. I thought, oh God, I hope her life turns out okay. She's done great.
She's had some ups and downs.
But she, for the most part, she's still relevant. She's doing well.
Yeah, I loved her. She's great. She was a great kid, and she grew up to be a great woman.
What stands out when you look back at your years on SNL?
Wow.
I mean, the good stuff. I know you think of the times when it was cutthroat and you were trying to get a sketch on the air and someone was backstabbing you.
That is exactly it. When you're up against it, when, you know...
It's tough.
When Lauren has left and, you know, you're the new kids and the pressure was really horrendous. But it's sort of like... That you forget the pain of childbirth, otherwise women wouldn't have another baby. If men had babies, there'd never be more than two in a family, I'm telling you.
Well, paint a picture for me, because you were ready to quit, and Belushi calls you up. John Belushi calls you up and says, let me talk you down. And he comes over to your house and has a talk with you?
No, he said, I'll drive you to the airport. So he literally, I had a backpack. And he and Judy showed up in a car, in a limo, and said to take me to the airport. And then they took me to 62nd Street to a psychiatrist. Judy's shrink said, and John's rationale was, if you want to quit this show, you're crazy. Because you have a chance to have access to network airwaves and, you know.
Everything.
You have something to say as a as a writer, as a comedian, and you're going to give that shot up. You know, I'm not giving up that shot, as they say in Hamilton. And he was basically saying, you're giving up that shot. So there's something wrong. So you got to go talk to this guy. And it was the, mind you, within a year, John was dead.
Yeah.
And John should have gone in and talked to the guy as well.
With you, yeah.
Right, yeah. And, which I think would have made Judy very happy. But he didn't. And we lost John at age 32. John's, I love that man. And he's now been gone 36 years. He's been dead longer
crazy?
Than he was alive. Yeah.
He died when he was 32. A lot of people just see John Belushi, funny guy, you know, the Blues Brothers. But
I don't think of an age.
Very loyal friend. I mean, we've talked to Dan Aykroyd numerous times. I mean, Dan still misses him to this day. He misses his friendship.
John shows up in my dreams from time to time, usually trying to borrow $50 and stealing my pack of Marlboros.
Was he the same guy that we would see on TV or in the movies as he would be in person? I mean, obviously, he's a guy that's taking you to a psychiatrist and not to the airport because he wants you to stay.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a soft, tender guy.
I mean, who does that? I mean, first off, he recommended me for the job. Right. And when I try to quit, he hijacks me and shanghais me and takes me to a shrink and says, go talk to this guy. I mean, he was that kind of guy.
Who does that?
He was a very, very loyal friend.
Right.
And also the most wonderful guy to hang with. His best buddy was Tino Insana. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Neighbors. The first Neighbors.
Yes, of course.
Before the...
you were in that movie, right?
Yeah, with it was Aykroyd and Belushi.
Yep.
And... I played a tow truck driver that kept pulling their cars out of the swamp, and my son was played by Tino Insana, who was 2 years older than me at the time. But when we were shooting the movie on Staten Island, we every night we would just go back to John and Judy's house and order in pizzas and, you know, turn on the TV and, you know, eat pizza. And John would shut the sound off and do this dubbing where we'd all play the voices of the characters on the movie. And it was so much fun, I tell you.
John's wife, Judy, has been on, and she said that exact same thing. He would turn down the sound, and he would come up with characters. Yeah, he would do voices to TV.
And you'd get, you know, we'd love to do that dubbing thing, and he was so brilliant at it. And then he'd get you laughing. You'd be laughing so hard, you thought, I'm going to die. I'm not going to be able to get enough oxygen.
No, I was wondering, what is it like? You were laughing, you know, those 4 years on SNL. You're friends with these funny people. You're a funny guy. I mean, you just spent your life laughing.
Yeah, and trying to make other people laugh, because Lord knows, do we need some laughter now?
Yeah, we do.
Tim Kazurinsky in studio about last night. Special screening tomorrow at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. I'm going to take a break. We're going to talk a little bit about this movie and what people can expect tomorrow night.
Fantastic.
All right. It's 720 WGN.
You called her twice? Dan, never call abroad more than once a week. Never, ever, ever. You know what your problem is? Your face. You're too good looking. These girls go out with you and they get nervous, man. They feel dumpy. Best thing that happened to you, Danny, is an industrial accident.
About last night's special screening tomorrow night at the Museum of Broadcast Communications at Kinsey and State. You can go to my Facebook page and get tickets there. Tim Kazurinsky, former SNL cast member who wrote the movie, is in studio with us. What is it about this movie? Is it because it's all Chicago? Is it because maybe it was made when I was in college or I've been to those bars? What is it?
I think it's
a love story.
It's a love story.
Oh,
it's it's the timeless thing of, you know, the single scene. And when David Mamet wrote this one act play, Sexual Perversity in Chicago, things haven't changed that much.
It hasn't.
No.
It's all the same.
It's still very, very similar. The bar scene, it's a one night stand that gets out of hand.
One night stand that gets out of hand. I like that.
When David is writing the one act play, and then you and your writing partner, you saw the play, you heard about the play, and you took it, then you developed this into a full movie, writing the entire script. Like, where does the character development come from? Is it his four prime characters, and you add to it?
David had written a screenplay for Paramount, and it had been rejected. Hard to believe. He's been one of the greatest playwrights America's ever produced.
Never.
The one act is 59 pages of very heavy It's pretty dark. Yes. It's pretty dark, and that was not what the studio wanted.
No,
so
we want a romantic comedy.
Yeah,
what's
so
fun.
We went in and tried to, you know, we just like you're doing a rehab on a house, just on, you know,
but took the same central premise. Yeah.
Yeah, and we wanted to be a little more hopeful. We wanted it to be a love story. We took out all the religion, all the parental stuff, and tried to make a universal experience for a dating, you know. It wanted to be anybody, any man, on any, you know, Rush Street type area.
I mean, it's all the same today, like you said. The only difference is that we have, they can swipe left and swipe right now.
Yeah.
You're still meeting people out there and you're still going to mothers.
Yeah. It's all those dating apps and eHarmony.
But you still have to meet out.
You still,
right.
have to meet out. Tim Kazurinsky in studio. We're going to make you stick around for at least another half hour. We're going
to
talk
about
last night, tomorrow night at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Again, if you want tickets, go to my Facebook page. We also have to talk about the Schwedy Ball.
Got to talk about Schwedy Ball.
SCHWEDDYBall.com, which
Schwedy
is coming up again.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that after the top of the hour. Coming up, the stories that matter with Domati from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN.
She's living inside my heart now.
Boy, this song takes me right back to 1986. In studio with us is Tim Kazurinsky. Tomorrow at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, we are hosting a screening of About Last Night. Tim's going to be there. He wrote the movie along with some producers. Answering your questions, go to my Facebook page, Pete McMurray, if you'd like tickets. How did you get Bob Seger to get on the soundtrack for this movie?
The producers did that.
Wow. Hey, Bob, do you want to do this? Yeah.
And Sheena Easton, she's on there.
Sheena E., John Waite.
Yeah. When I had seen a rough of this film, that scene of moving in together, that they had actually had Hart. They had the music of Hart doing These Dreams.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I love that song. And I was like, oh, God. So when I finally saw the final cut, all the music was different. I was like,
what happened
to Hart?
They wanted more money.
Yeah, but it was the soundtrack was great.
Did they film that entire movie? I know, obviously, they filmed the outdoor parts here in Chicago, but did they film that apartment scenes and all that in Chicago or back in L.A.?
Jane, you got it right. They shot all the outside stuff here. They shot a little. Actually, they did shoot a little bit of the girls' apartment scene here, but literally all the indoor stuff shot in L.A. The bar, Mother McGuire's, which was an amalgam of Mothers and Butch McGuire's.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Just had Mother McGuire's.
Yeah.
They just took shots of all the you know, it looks. But the scene, the stuff they built in L.A. looks exactly like
that
restaurant.
So that was shot in L.A.?
All shot in L.A.,
even
all bar stuff.
Remember they were at the Christmas party for New Year's, and they had all, like, at Mother's there. It's Mother's, or is it Butch McGuire's?
Butch McGuire's has a train.
Yeah, the Christmas train.
Yeah.
It could have been in the building.
It was amazing. They did the same. Actually, I remember that they did very similar to that. They kind of recreated for Michael Apted did for Continental Divide, which I had a little movie I had a cameo in with John. But they redid like the Billy Goat sort of stuff.
Right.
They did recreated a lot of internal Chicago stuff for that. They do remarkable work on those sets. It's incredible.
They really, really do. And sometimes when you're watching a show and you're watching somebody walk through the hallways of a house, and I've been on sets where I know it's a hallway of a house and I know this is a set, but when I'm watching it, I'm like, wow, did they really shoot that on location? Because they make the rooms look so real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's incredible what set designers can do.
When you wrote this movie, Rob Lowe, did you picture him? Did they already have it cast, or did they cast him after?
They cast him after. In fact, the director of record at that time was Jonathan Demme, and who gave great notes, great feedback, wonderful director, loved him. But the head of the studio just one night decided that he wanted Rob Lowe in that role because his daughter liked him, whatever. So bingo, hired Rob Lowe for the part, and Jonathan Demme quit the next day.
Tell Jane about the scene when Rob Lowe was naked one day. How many women were on the set?
Well, when it finally came when the movie was being shot, I rewrote it 13 times over 7 years. So when it's getting shot, I'm under contract to be in Toronto, Canada, shooting Police Academy 4.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And so I'm like, I couldn't get beyond set watching this film get made. So, but I did have a couple of days off, and I flew out to California to shoot a scene. I have one scene in the film. When Demi Moore breaks up with Rob Lowe, she goes out on a bad blind date.
Yeah.
Blind
date my God, that's right.
I am the bad blind date.
Is that you?
Yes. Yes. I'm doing card tricks and pull a card out from behind. Yeah, yes. I'm everybody's bad blind date.
That is fantastic.
That is totally you.
But when I was there and they were shooting a scene where Rob Lowe is getting out of the shower, and every woman on the studio is on set that day to watch Rob Lowe get out of the shower naked, and it was.
What is Rob Lowe? He's got to know. I mean, he's there every day. He's like, there's 5 people here today, and there's 55 people here now, and I'm naked.
I was literally standing between my writing partner, Denise, and one of the producer's assistants, and as he's getting out of the shower, I hear my writing partner say, "Oh my God," she says, she said, "I'm married, and I'd do him." She used a different word than that.
Of course.
And on the other side of me, the producer's assistant says, she said, "I'm gay and I do it." That is what a star is. That's what star potential is. I'm like,
well, the chemistry between those two in the movie about last night, Rob Lowe and Demi Moore, I feel like there was something going on when the cameras were off.
There had been. The movie got made, they had been an item from St. Elmo's fire, I think.
Yeah, because so that whole Brat Pack thing was happening, right? St. Elmo's fire, and so these guys were just sort of rising up to popularity, and so they'd be a natural choice to put in as these cast members.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were the ones that were leading the way.
And she, what a crier. I mean, that woman, Demi,
She could cry on command.
She's amazing. Yeah.
Wow.
There's a British actress named Juliet Stevenson. I don't know if you've ever seen her. There's a movie called Truly, Madly, Deeply. She did with Alan Rickman. And that girl, the only one who's a better crier than Demi Moore.
Yeah, Demi has those scenes where you just have that one tear that comes right down the center of your face.
Oh, yeah.
How do you do that?
That girl can cry, I tell you.
Did you think of bad things? Like, did you ever ask her?
I have no idea how she draws that up.
Can you cry on demand?
No, no.
Okay.
I can't even laugh on demand.
I was about to ask, can you laugh on demand?
No,
no. No? You can't cackle? I'm a good cackle on demand.
Are you?
Yeah, so every time you tell a joke, Peek, I'm like...
Wait a second. Boy, I thought I was funny. Hold on a second there. About last night, tomorrow night at Kinzie and State at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, I was watching YouTube over the weekend, and they have the movie on YouTube, but it's going to be so special because we're going to watch the movie, and then we can ask you questions. I mean, the audience can ask you and the producers questions. How did you get Rob Lowe? I want to know how you get Bob Seger. Yeah. Who's at the top of his game in 1986.
See, Stuart Oken and Jason Britt are going to be there for the talkback, too, and they can fill in all those blanks. On the talk back. It'd be great. Any questions you have, we're happy to answer.
And the questions we can ask are some of the famous quotes that come from About Last Night, because you obviously created those famous quotes.
Yeah. Well, there's some of it's an amalgam of Mammoth stuff and Tim and Denise in there. So it's, sometimes we get mistaken and get credit for his lines and vice versa.
Do you have a favorite line? Maybe one of yours.
Well, one of them is, it's official. I've become my mother. Yeah. And which was actually my line. People think it's a Denise line. But but there's lines that I wrote that she thinks that.
Right.
People don't know who wrote, whether it was the male writer or the female writer that wrote the dirty line or not. And I got to tell you, Denise is very, very capable of writing, getting down and dirty.
Now, do you
She's
write,
a great writing partner.
Do you write a movie knowing that they're going to take off their clothes and get naked?
Yeah. There's certain things that they go a little more graphic than you imagined that they would.
Okay.
Because I remember the first time I took my daughter to see the film.
I mean, the shower scene with Demi and Rob is a pretty steamy scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that, and I took my 15-year-old daughter to a screening.
Oh, boy. How uncomfortable was that?
Whoops. But you know what? She was totally fine with it, and they asked her a question afterwards, and she says, well, when people are in love, you know, it's like.
Oh, you're something like, wow.
She was great.
Did you learn that?
She handled it beautifully. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I can remember. So in 86, I guess, is when, right? It came out. We were watching it.
Yeah.
So I was 15. 15?
I hate when you say that.
Yeah.
I was in college.
You were 35?
No.
No, but I mean, at 15, you're like, oh, you see a scene like that. You see anyone naked. You're like, oh, I can't watch this. It's just embarrassing. But then you've been watching it for years and years and years. And now who cares about those scenes? I watch it for the scenery. And I'm like, look at what Grant Park used to look like.
Yeah.
And look at the street.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I mean, these people, the way they're acting in the rain and in the snow, I'm like, they are in Chicago.
And there were no lights at Wrigley Field when we shot that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now there are.
You're right.
That's the only thing that's different besides Demi Moore's chest.
The final scene where Rob says, hey, can we go out to dinner? And then he takes off and he starts running through. Is it Grant Park?
It's Grant Park, yeah.
Grant Park. Because in the background, all you see is the Aeon building. There's no other buildings there.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So many buildings have been built since 1986.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting, Jane, that you brought that up because I noticed that yesterday when I was watching YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah, that skyline is markedly different now.
Right.
It sure is. I remember from watching the movie when I would come to Grant Park, you know, in later teens, knowing that I've seen this movie and see this area, I'm like, this is where she walked her bike and she kicked along wearing her overalls. I'm like,
The overalls.
Yeah. I wanted to be in that scene. I wanted to, when I got older, to play softball and meet a guy and go on, play on a team and ride my bikes.
Yeah. 16-inch softball.
It didn't happen. Yeah.
The real kind.
I want to ask you about Somewhere in Time. Did you go to Mackinac Island and film that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's with Christopher Reeve and
Jane Seymour.
I love that movie.
That's a great soundtrack, too.
Really? I need to look up the soundtrack?
Oh, my God, that soundtrack is phenomenal.
Somewhere in Time. Have you seen that movie? Christopher Reeve goes back in time to
date. I love
date
both of those actors. I love Jane Seymour because she's got a great name.
Yeah, she just posed naked for Playboy.
She did?
Yep.
Just this month?
In her 60s, yep.
Really?
Yeah.
She's naked again?
Yep.
She's done it like three different times, right?
Drop of a hat. Every decade she's in there. So.
Good for her.
I love
Somewhere in Time, great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just fantastic.
Correct. Yeah, terrific.
And do you spend time in Mackinac Island?
Yes, I had the best time. And two of my Second City castmates were there.
Okay.
Bruce Jarko and Nancy, and Audrey Neenan. And we had a great time. And then they accidentally destroyed the film in processing. The chemicals were on. And so, like, 2 months later, we had to go back and shoot it again. And it was,
wait, the whole film destroyed?
No.
Just parts?
That's parts of that section on Mackinac. So we got to go back and do that stuff again.
It's great.
And it was so great to see everybody. And he was so nice. Chris Reeve was the greatest guy.
Well, sure.
He's always Superman in my eyes.
He was a super guy, yeah. And years later after his accident, they have every year on Mackinac, there's a reunion.
Oh, yeah, they have a party
every
year.
They have a party one
Does
weekend.
Does Jane go back there?
Jane goes back a lot, and they invite me to go back every year. But there's 1,000 people show up. They dress in those costumes.
Oh, wow.
And these hopeless romantics go there for this weekend. And it's an amazing sort of weekend where they relive, and they all make their own costumes and wardrobe stuff. But she went back after Chris's accident, and she's a painter and had done this beautiful watercolor of them on the beach. She's selling for a lot of money.
Oh my gosh!
Donating all the money to his foundation.
That's awesome.
A sweetheart. Yeah.
And Mackinac Island is so charming that you can't have a car, so it's all horses.
Right.
And it's like Hydra.
Yeah, it's like Hydra in Greece.
The island in Greece.
And then the horses have to relieve themselves, and then they sell fudge at the store next door. So I'm always leery about buying the fudge.
Oh, well, you got to have the fudge if you're on Mackinac Island.
I know, but you know how they sell it and they package that up. They're like, you see that horse right there?
Yeah. Wow, I've never really thought about that.
Really?
I haven't been back since. I went there with a girl and we broke up and I haven't been back since.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have okay memories of it. I knew it was we were breaking up.
Yeah. And to this day, I can't really enjoy fudge unless there's the smell of equine urine.
See? About. Yeah.
Speaking of the sweaty ball, can we talk about that at the Museum of Broadcast Communications?
What a great segue to sweaty balls.
Saturday, December 15th. This is the second year that this is happening. Tim.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the crazy, crazy event where everybody gets to dress up as their favorite SNL character or just wear a really ugly sweater. There's an ugly Christmas sweater contest that you can win prizes. But it's there's a live band. There's karaoke. There's also access to the SNL exhibit. If you've not seen it, it's a fantastic exhibit that fills the whole museum. And so you can go off and visit that. But, I mean, there's food by Blue Plate, and cocktails from Tito's Vodka, and well, this also you got some Pabst and Old Style too, if you want.
Pete's in. Just say cocktails, Pete's in.
Yeah. Yeah.
This thing, ugly sweater, and I'm in. I'll eat Christmas sweater.
This thing sold out last year, and it's going to sell out again this year.
It's really
the sweaty
great
ball.
And how do people get tickets?
They can go to sweatyball.com.
That's SCHWEDDY ball.com.
Yes.
Yeah, all one word. Sweaty ball. Not there's no plural, just ball.
Right.
Sweatyball.com.
Just ball. Yes. I feel like we've gone to another level in our relationship where we exchange numbers today.
Oh no.
Are we there yet?
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, my brother lives in Evanston. We can hang out, have
Absolutely.
Some coffee on a Saturday.
We go to Crossroads and have some gyros.
Yeah, yes.
And spanakopita.
Whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
I love it.
Tim, I like galataburica.
I make a great galataburica.
You do? Oh, that's
I
my
do.
Favorite.
Is it? It was my mom's favorite.
Yeah. I honeymooned in Greece. We were talking about the island of Idra.
Really? I wonder what was going on because Kaczorinski is Polish, right?
We're getting Greek on you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Polish. It was Irish, isn't it? Oh, Polish, that's it. Timothy Okazarinski. Yeah.
I love you. You're the best. Seriously, we could have you on for 2 hours.
This is great.
Talk about anything.
Kazarinskis.
Yeah.
And people can't follow you on social media. I think you'd be perfect for Twitter since you're a writer. You could write funny
one-liners
all day. That would be your thing.
Yeah, I actually have a kid in Brooklyn that occasionally throws something on a Twitter thing for me. That
a kid in Brooklyn?
You know, you can do that on your phone. I can help you set it up on a Saturday when we're having coffee.
I'm a moron.
But you're so smart and funny. All you need is one-liners. Like, I don't do a lot of Twitter because I really have nothing to say.
Uh-huh.
I do a lot of Instagram because I take a lot of pictures.
Yeah.
So
Instagram's big. Yeah.
Instagram, I just take a picture and post it, and here we go. But Twitter, you got to be clever and funny. I mean,
that's your wheelhouse right there.
Yeah.
Tim Kaczorinski, what are you wearing tomorrow? What should I be wearing?
Oh, no.
I'm going to be pretty cash.
Okay.
It's comfortable. Wear clothes. Comfortable clothing. Yeah.
Like you're wearing now? Something like that?
I got this overshirt from Orvis, whatever.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Got it.
Yeah.
Tomorrow
so
night.
Casual. Watch the movie.
Museum of Broadcast Communications, about last night. Look, I'm losing my voice because I'm laughing.
I got
because he's so excited.
Thank you.
I got a secret here if you want.
A secret. Yes.
He does have a secret.
Oh, my gosh. You're carrying those around.
Look, I made my Broadway debut in An Act of God with Jim Parsons a couple of years ago. And it was him and two angels. I was the angel. And one point, somebody got in a coughing fit. And I threw him a lozenge, and after and they were coughing and throwing him off his game, and because he played God, I was the Archangel Gabriel.
Right.
And he said, "Did I see you throw something into the audience tonight?" I said, "Yeah, that there's a woman that had that coughing fit." He said, "Oh, she was driving me nuts." He said, "Yeah, I threw her a cough drop." He said, "Oh my God, you really are an angel."
That is the best, Tim Kaczorinski. Great to see you. Thank
my
you for
pleasure.
Coming in.
Thank you so
and
much.
We'll see you tomorrow night.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks, Pete.
It's 720 WGN.